We absolutely love collaborating with AAPMD as an organization because of the message about collaboration. And I know we want to leave Dr. Zoghi and Dr. Koppelson all the time. Stacey and I just quickly wanted to share a few slides to really not only thank them for the work that they are doing in what we are covering today's research, but what they do every day behind the scenes at the Breathe Institute. I'm so fortunate to be able to be behind the scenes and to see this magic at work and to see how much work really goes into not only coming up with the concepts, but seeing the entire thing through from data collection to everything that they'll share in between. But just such an honor to have these amazing surgeons with you guys this evening. I wanted to give a quick shout out to Patty and Stacey and Howie, obviously, and Chad behind the scenes. So the whole concept of this Airway Collab is a quarterly meetup to be able to share some of the updates from each of the different chapters and sections of AAPMD. We at the Breathe Institute, thanks through the leadership of Dr. Zoghi, host muted me. Okay, hopefully can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, beautiful. Thanks through our collaboration with AAPMD, we are here to represent all of the research and advances that our collaborative team, both at the Breathe Institute and externally, have introduced. I know Howie shared this slide already, but for those of you who want to have this front and center, as both Dr. Zoghi and Dr. Koppelson go over this awesome research contribution, there is the QR code. And real quick, I know Stacey was asking me about a bio. How many of you, just quick show of chats, have heard Dr. Zoghi lecture before? Let me know. I'm going to ask about Dr. Koppelson in a second, but who all has heard Dr. Zoghi, whether it was a Breathe course, a previous AAPMD symposium, let us know. But for those of you who are new, just a quick little background on this phenomenal ENT sleep surgeon. We have the privilege of having him direct all of our clinical efforts, but he doesn't stop there. He continues to be incredibly prolific in the field of research. And I have a quick little slide contribution there for him. But in addition to that, almost like two weekends out of the month, he is away educating and spreading this knowledge to communities all over the world. Obviously, the pedigree of his educational background speaks for itself. So that's Dr. Suraj Zoghi.
Dr. Really Hinden is known as the godfather of airway, and Dr. Zoghi is known as the goat of tethered oral tissues, pretty much. So yeah,
there you go. That's who you're learning with tonight. But it doesn't stop there. I definitely want to encourage you guys to follow Dr. Zoghi's Google Scholar. Fun fact, and Dr. Zoghi, you just heard me share this recently, but I wanted to do an update on how many publications, because we're always sending his bio out. And I'm like, when I first met this phenomenal human being, he had 60 publications. That was what was on his website. And I think in a period of about 6 years, we did a whole little guess game. He's contributed close to 47 more just in a period of like 6 years. So he's now at 97 publications, guys. I think that deserves a huge round of applause. Who graduates Harvard with 20 publications under their belt? That's why we do the things we do at TBI, because of that caliber of kind of curiosity and knowledge seeking. And we got so lucky that we didn't have just one curious surgeon who was ready and receptive to listen to the feedback of the functional community, but we got two. And thanks to Dr. Zoghi's connection with Dr. Koppelson, we have Dr. Koppelson leading all of our efforts at Breathe Max. So he's an oral maxillofacial surgeon, fellowship trained, amazing human being. You're going to hear more from him in a second. Let me know if you've heard Dr. Koppelson, whether it's one of our lectures or IAOM or any other avenues. And then with that, this is the Breathe Outlook update, guys. So I know Howie shared this, and I'll let Stacey jump on in just a few seconds to close the intro. But this is the portion where we give you an update on kind of the state of the field and what research projects we are working on and updates from our team's perspective. Who all was in Atlanta? So this was the last time Dr. Zoghi gave his updates. 2021, we had a phenomenal time. We gifted our amazing affiliate, Dr. Loria, the first ever Dr. Zaghi Award. And here is the presentation. He makes sure he makes all of his information open access. Most of the platforms are all open access. He also has open access lectures on his website. I'll skip this slide. And then Stacy is going to talk to you guys about why this is such a big part of what we are trying to do as a collective. We have a huge community at AAPMD of different professionals, and the contributions that are being made by all of those who are contributing to research are the missing key. So Stacy, take it on from here, sweetie.
Yes. So we're really nurturing the liaison group. And so this is one of Howie's analogies or anagrams. It's transforming lives one breath at a time by his CARE method. So we're collaborating through awareness, research, and education, because it all goes hand in hand.
And we gifted, I'm going to skip to this, but we awarded Cynthia Peterson for her contributions to really pioneering the Ferris 6. And we're here tonight to just inspire a culture of knowledge sharing and community building. So I'll stop the slides there. We have more on the liaisons we'll share at the end, but we thank you all for being here. And let's turn it over to Dr. Zaghi and Dr. Koppelson.
All right. Thank you guys so much, Howie, Stacy, Lily, for that amazing introduction. And thank you guys so much for the over 130 people that are on this webinar and the many others who will listen to it after the fact. We are here to discuss a really important and impactful research paper entitled, Does Head and Neck Posture Affect Cone Beam Computed Tomography Assessment of the Upper Airway? So basically, the question here is one that many may have. Does it matter the way that you take a CT? What do you guys think here in the audience? Does it matter how you take the CT in terms of the measurements that you may or may not get from this paper? All right. And that seems like a pretty obvious kind of a conclusion, especially for those who have seen me speak before. I may have shown you a slide like this. This is a dynamic MRI showing us how various head and neck postures can literally affect the dimensions of the airway, right? And if we're going to be talking about the different dimensions of airway assessment in terms of not only tongue tie, but also tongue tone and tongue space, wouldn't you agree that it would be important to have a systematic way of assessing for tongue space and airway? What do you guys think? So our goals in this paper were to better use the cone beam CT scan, not only to predict for risk of obstructive sleep disordered breathing, but also in our assessment of tongue space when we're assessing our patients to determine whether or not it's safe, for example, to do a tongue tie release, and whether or not we should be looking at other factors in terms of our treatment planning. One thing that's pretty, you know, common now to assess on the CBCT scan is the intermolar width. And we do have good understanding and ranges for the intermolar width. The intermolar width doesn't really change based on posture, but one thing that almost always changes on posture is the posterior airway space. Now, there's different ways of assessing the posterior airway space. You can measure it based on the diameter, or better yet, the cross-sectional area. And there's different places that you can measure it: retromaxillary, behind the maxilla, behind the palate, behind the tongue, and behind the mandible. But now my question to you is, do you guys use CBCTs for your airway? And would you like to learn about a protocol that we validated to help optimize the reliability, sensitivity, and specificity for assessing these issues in our patients, all right? So I'm gonna give you the rundown that this is the validated protocol. It's the only validated protocol that's out there, and it's published in a very prestigious journal of oral maxillofacial surgery. And if you like this work that we do, we encourage you to please take a second and click on this link to directly download the paper. by downloading the paper direct from the journal site. First of all, it's open access, courtesy of the Foundation for Airway Health and Beam Readers. But second of all, you're just clicking on it, downloading it, will help it rank higher and really rewards us authors by allowing us to have a big impact, such that the journal reviewers are going to be continuously favorable towards us when we submit these ideas for publication. So do we get everyone clicking on the link? Can I get a yes in the group? As we explore the main findings of this study. And so for that, I want to turn it over to Dr. Koppelson, who will tell us about the different steps that we took to validate this protocol, the key findings, which you may have heard me speak before in terms of the Nasion Bayesian C3 angle. We're going to be looking at the research. We're going to be looking at the figures from this paper. And then at the end, we'll be going through 4 CT scans that I got in the clinic just today. And we'll be going back and forth between myself and Dr. Koppelson and you guys to see what can be learned, what are the pearls and pitfalls that we can glimpse given this new research. How do we put this research into action? Because even though we did the study, if it's just a study and we don't really put it into use, we're not making the most of that research, which is researching for those truths so that we can better the care we're able to offer our patients through the most precise and diagnostic. So Dr. Koppelson, will you take over and walk us through why we did the study and the background and the methods and the results? Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And first of all, what an honor to join AEPMD. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. Very excited to be here, honored to be able to speak to all of you airway-focused providers tonight. And I'm super proud about this paper. This paper was a lot of hard work, but you know, we were earlier alluding to the power of collaboration. And this article is a testament to what you can do with collaboration. We had a multi-center study. We had Doctors Pata, Stewart, Harry, and Hansen, who all contributed by finding patients, having patients join the different protocols so we could have a lot of power, we could test a lot of different variables. This is the kind of research that traditionally would have to be done in a university setting, and we are able to do this. We are able to contribute, scratch that itch even after we leave the university setting in private practice and continue to push the science and the field forward. So I'm super happy about that. Also, I have to also send a big thank you to the Foundations of Airway Health and Beam Readers for their generous donation to make this article open access. And for those that haven't heard me speak before, I'm pretty casual, and anybody wants to jump in with questions along the way, Dr. Zaghi, if you have anything to chime in as I'm going through this, please don't hesitate. So, you know, why is this article so important, right? Like, we are all airway providers. We know that head and neck posture can affect your airway, right? But this hasn't fully been studied. Like, if you did a deep dive on the research, like, it's not there. Like, okay, if you have a forward head posture, it changes your airway by X, right? So it's just something we all take for granted as just basic knowledge, but there's not a huge science that's supporting something that we all kind of know and use in our clinical practice. All right. So, you know, some of the articles I read that kind of served as a background and a foundation for this article. First of all, what is a typical minimal cross-sectional area for someone that has obstructive sleep apnea? I think Dr. Zaghi had this slide earlier, but you know, based on all these different studies, generally anything less than 52 is considered millimeter squared in terms of the minimal cross-sectional area, is considered almost guaranteed to have sleep apnea. Between 52 and 100 is an intermediate probability. And once you get above 110 millimeters squared, you're in the low probability range. Okay. And this is the effect of the swallowing phase and how that can affect your airway size. And we actually have a couple really cool CT scans today. So I'll kind of forward through this a little bit because I have a couple really cool CBCT examples to go through that'll show you how someone being in a certain swallowing phase, if they're in the active phase of swallowing, how that can impact their airway. The only studies that I could really find that really looked at how posture can affect your airway size had to do with being standing versus supine. And people saw that in supine CT scans, that airway sizes and volumes shrunk compared to when a patient was standing. And this was one of the clues that kind of led people to think that posture can have effect on CBCT airway size. So we designed a study where we wanted to actually see how does different postural changes, and we'll show you the five different groups we looked at, how do those five different postural variables affect CBCT airway minimal cross-sectional area. And then second, we wanted to see, is there a angle that we can validate to serve as something that can measure for cranial cervical extension and flexion? And the angle we chose is the nasion-basion to the upper anterior point of C3. When we're going through the CT scans today, we're going to show you guys how we calculate it, and we'll show you guys how that can actually affect the validity of a CBCT scan that you're looking at, either as just as a baseline where you're just meeting the patient for a first time, or if you're trying to test the efficacy of an intervention that you did. For example, for me, it would be maxillomandibular advancement surgery or maxillary expansion, or if you're doing some kind of a, other dental maxillofacial orthopedic remodeling appliance, or even a mandibular advancement device. Okay, so we, again, because we were able to do this multi-center collaborative study, we had a total of 90 subjects that were included. A few people were not included due to motion artifact and things like that, but we got 90 people. That was way more than enough to get good power to the study, be able to analyze the data with good certainty and validity. So the five groups we had, group A and group E, were the extreme variation groups. So those were people with their head tilted down and head tilted up, okay? We had some moderate and minimal variation groups. In group B, we wanted to know, okay, some people have a CBCT machine that is a standing machine. Some people have a sitting machine. Does that cause differences? So we had the same patients take CBCT standing and sitting, and we were able to compare those two. In group C, we had a swallowing variation. So we had heard inklings that people, I don't know why that keeps going forward, that they were told that, oh, you should have the patient swallow once. Other people were told, no, I was told that swallowing twice gives you a more accurate result. So then we were able to compare the same patient, one swallowing twice, see what the differences were there. And last, the use of a chin rest, right? So a lot of CBCT machines have chin rests, and we wanted to see how does the chin rest affect the minimal cross-sectional area of the airway. So we also had our patients take a subjective questionnaire. We used the Ferris CT7 questionnaire. There's a QR code that links you directly to that questionnaire. But over here, we have a summary of all the demographic data. So you can see out of our patients, we asked them, do you mouth breathe while awake? 48% said never, 44% sometimes, 7% often, 1% never. It's all summarized here. I'll kind of, for time's sake, forward through this, but it's all available, again, open access for free in the journal. So I encourage you to look at this in the article whenever you have some time. So we had two aims. Our primary aim was to assess whether mild, moderate, or extreme alterations in head posture, again, those are the five groups that I just spoke about, whether they were associated with changes to the minimal cross-sectional area of the posterior airway space. And our secondary aim was to assess whether the utility of an angular measurement, again, nasion, basion to C3, could control for alterations of head position on a CBCT scan, okay? So just looking a little bit at the results of our basic demographics, again, we had 90 subjects in our study. You can see that 70% of them are female. Average age was 40.7 years, plus or minus 13.7 years. Generally, men and women had pretty similar measurements on average when looking at their baseline control studies. Only difference was the minimal cross-sectional area of men was slightly larger at 190 versus 153 millimeters squared. On average, the minimal cross-sectional area was 164. The average NBC3 angle was 112 degrees, plus or minus 8. In clinical practice, what we're seeing is about on a normal head and neck posture, patients have NBC3 angles at about 110 to 115 degrees, plus or minus around 5 degrees. Our SNA and SNB angles were just in line with the literature at 82 and 80 degrees, respectively. PVA measurement of 89 millimeters and a intermolar width mean of 35.6 millimeters. So, Dr. Zaghi, do you want to go through some of this result data, or do you want me to keep going through it? I don't mind going through it. I just didn't know when you wanted to jump back in. So let me know. You're muted, by the way.
I think that was great. Let's go back and forth. But I think that was a fantastic overview of why we did the study and the background research behind it. But just in summary, there, you know, and to repeat things in a different way, there was five groups: head tilted down, standing versus sitting, swallow variation, using a chin rest, and head tilted up. Let's start by looking at the swallow variation in this sample. Dr. Pada had a variation of a swallow technique that she wanted to use, and we were happy for her to, you know, experiment with that swallow variation. But really, we see that there was not much change in the head neck angle based on, you know, whether you swallowed once or if you swallowed twice and then rest your tongue where it naturally goes. And so we basically use that as like a control condition, right? Because just the very fact of taking a CBCT, coming out of the machine, resetting it, there might be some variation. But in this case, what we're seeing is that the variation that you might get just if you came in and out of the CT is about plus or minus 5 degrees. Does that make sense? So basically, any CT, if you repeat it, you know, you drink a cup of water, you scratch your head, you know, you raise your shoulder, you know, you wink your eyes, something happens, there's a possibility that your head is going to change by 5 degrees. That's reasonable. That's expected. All right. We're not going to penalize you if you're less than 5 degrees. But if you're more than 5 degrees, for example, if you head tilt your head down, well, that changes it by 5 degrees, 10 degrees, 15 degrees, 20 degrees. All right. So that's really going to make a big difference. Most of the time, there were some patients who, even with their head tilted down, increased their head and neck angle to compensate. All right. So keep note that usually when you keep your head down, the nasion basion C3 angle gets smaller. But in some patients, if they can't breathe, then they go down and they compensate. So the nasion basion C3 angle that we're talking about is one measure of the head and neck flexion that is important, but it's not the only measure, such that when you go down, in general, this number gets smaller, but you might compensate. And in general, when you go up, this number increases, the flexion angle increases. And we've also shown and learned that, separate from what's normal and not, what we can expect is that if the head and neck angle goes up, the airway opens. And if the head and neck angle goes down, the airway closes. So now we have an additional measure on top of just looking at the maxilla to determine whether or not there may be something that's an external variable that's affecting our measurements here. And so we take a look at things like using a chin rest, and using a chin rest can have two effects. It can tilt your chin down, or it can extend it out. All right. So we're just kind of really aware of how alterations in the posture can affect your head and neck angle as measured by the nasion basion C3 angle. In addition to the angle clinically, I'm also looking at the direction of the maxilla. I want to make sure the maxilla is in a horizontal axis. If the maxilla is tilted up or the maxilla is tilted down, that can give me a clue. And we do know that over-straightening the spine is also a compensation that's not accounted for in the nasion-basion C3 angle. So you can keep your angle the same, but over-straighten your spine, and that would also open up the airway, yet not be reflected in the nasion-basion C3 angle, okay? So with that, I'll pass it back to Dr. Koppelson, and I'll see what you guys thought about that explanation and if you had any questions. But I'll also say that, you know, 5-degree change is 25% difference, 10 degrees, 88%. But Dr. Koppelson, why don't you share these results in your own words?
Awesome. So let me get my screen back up. Great. So, all right. So what we have here is the results of our data. You can see head tilted up has a strong correlation with an increase in your NBC, or excuse me, head tilted down has a strong correlation with the decrease in your NBC3 angle. We had about a negative 10.5 degree on average. So putting your chin down will have a strong correlation with decreasing your NBC3 angle, excuse me. Head tilted up has the counter. You have an NBC3 angle increase of 14.4 degrees plus or minus 3 degrees. So you can see that this angle is going to act as a very good surrogate for you guys in clinical practice to be able to quickly, you know, objectively measure and find out whether your patient, you know, obviously, hopefully by accident, took this CT scan in either in a forward head, you know, cranial cervical extension or cranial cervical flexion. All right. And then when it comes to standing versus sitting, we did not notice any appreciable changes, nothing with significant power, also with the swallowing variable and also with the use of a chin rest. There was some correlation, but nothing too powerful. And Dr. Zaghi went through this one already. The plus or minus 5. I think this is really huge, guys. So look, even a 5-degree change can have almost a 25% increase on the minimal cross-sectional area. So patient can go from 100 to 125, go from that high intermediate probability to low probability, right? So it's really important, I think, especially if there's any question, to add this to your CBCT protocol when you're going through all your measurements. We'll go through some today. You'll see some of the things that I go through, but if you know, if you're looking at the minimal cross-sectional area, you're doing all these measurements, adding the NBC3 angle will be beneficial, and especially when looking at reliability between two CBCT scans, right? So baseline versus post-treatment, right? Make sure that what you're looking at when looking at airway minimal cross-sectional area is reliable. So here are a couple examples from the research study. You can see this patient, this was their baseline CBCT. Look at their minimal cross-sectional area. It's super hard for me to read it, but it's all color-coded, right? It's all down here in the red. It's probably around 100 millimeters squared or less. We had them do a cranial cervical extension. We said, tilt your head up. Look at what happened to the airway. It like quadrupled in minimal cross-sectional area. So this can have a huge impact on the way. Lupita asked if we asked beam readers to add this measurement to the Breathe Institute report. Dr. Zaghi, have we added this to the Breathe Institute radiology report yet?
We'll make sure to that they definitely should if it's not already on there.
Yeah.
We'll touch base with them.
Yeah, I think now that we published it, I think it's time to get it on there. And here's a patient that was in group A. So this is a patient, baseline CBCT, beautiful airway. And we said, tilt your head down, airway became, you know, red flag danger zone. So, you know, this shows you not only is the NBC3 angle reliable, but also the impacts that extreme variations in head posture can have on your airway. Again, just to go through this protocol again, natural head position, horizontal visual axis, so have that maxilla and a nice horizontal axis. Close mouth, breathe through your nose, place your teeth together, swallow once, then rest your tongue where it naturally goes. and avoid using a bite registration and avoid using a chin rest. And although our study didn't show a huge impact of using a chin rest, we'll show you an example today of a patient that had taken a scan with a chin rest where, you know, it wasn't, you know, taken properly, and you can see the impact a chin rest could have when not used appropriately.
Great. Google. And then, so I'll just kind of comment on that slide that you have here. It's that we want our CTs to be taken in the natural head position. All right. So if they have forward head posture, we don't want to manipulate that and put them into awkward positions. So the purpose of this is so that the patient is in their natural head position. If they have a forward head posture that's opening up their airway, that's okay. We just want to record it that, hey, look, they have a forward head posture. The NBC3 angle is extended. Then when you do your expansion, their head goes back, and usually the airways may stay the same size, okay, or increase a little bit, but the posture improves. So instead of having our outcome measure be, wow, we're looking for a gigantic airway, no, we understand. The body compensates. The head goes forward in order to maintain whatever airway you need. And then when the airway is improved, the dimension stays the same. It's just that you don't have to compensate as much to achieve that airway. I hope that makes sense.
And that's a beautiful point. I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, one of the things I've noticed in my maxillomandibular advancement surgery patients, right? These are patients that traditionally their airway will double, triple, quadruple on the post-op CBCT. But I practice, you know, similar to Dr. Zaghi, the functional approach to frenuloplasty. I'm really all in on the functional approach to MMA surgery. So my patients are working with myofunctional therapists. They're working on their breathing, swallowing, posture, all of that. And we're having, you know, definitely improvements in their airway size and volume, but what we're also seeing is that their posture is improving. So maybe it's not like a fourfold increase, maybe it's a slight increase, but they're able to have that same airway because they're in a normal posture with an expanded skeleton. And so that's a really good point you brought up. Thank you for bringing that up. Should we go through a few CBCT scans now, guys? Do you think that's a good idea? You guys want to see like some good examples that may be helpful? And then also show you guys how we get it on a CBCT. Perfect. Okay, so I've already preloaded like 4 scans. Hopefully my computer doesn't explode with all these CBCT scans open. Let's start with, you know, we were just talking about that chin rest. I think that'll be a good one.
Yeah. And Lupita just mentioned in the chat, she should put it, if you guys chat, put it to everyone. But she said, this is so amazing. It explains so much that I have seen before and after MARPI cases. Who else has seen this? Who else is seeing, you know, changes to the head neck angle with expansion? And sometimes, you know, even more profound than the airway dimensions that you're seeing. Did you get Dr. Koppelson?
I'm looking for...
Let me talk about the slides until you come, okay?
Let me pull up there.
Yeah, you're good. So, you know, there's one other aspect to this that we didn't talk about, and that's how you should be breathing, okay? Should you be inhaling, exhaling, or having tidal volume? And, you know, there it turns out that there was another study that was performed that looked at exactly that, showing that if you do forced inspiration or forced expiration, you're more likely to have extremes between those with severe versus normal groups. So in this study, it took about 50 people, control, mild, moderate apnea, and severe apnea, and they measured the cross-sectional area at the uvula and at the hypopharynx during tidal breathing, which means just normal volumes, and forced inspiration and forced expiration. And what they find is that, you know, tidal volume is perhaps the most reliable, because when you're doing forced inspiration or forced expiration, anytime you're forcing, you're contracting those muscles and you're more likely to diminish the airway volume. So again, the most reliable way is to be breathing through your nose. If you tell them to hold their breath, When they hold their breath, they are clamping down and they are making the airway smaller. Each of these little insights, I hope, gives at least one person in this group an aha moment and maybe makes you change your protocol a little bit and gives you a little bit more confidence in the results that you're achieving. Was that interesting for anyone? The use of a of breathing. And then a question comes up about a bite registration. Well, look at this case, okay? Look at this case with a bite registration. What is it doing? It's pushing the tongue back. And by pushing the tongue back, it's obstructing the airway, all right? And look at the chin rest, the head is forward, and yet we can recognize that there's an obtuse nasion basion C3 angle. Are you ready, Dr. Koppelson?
Yes, ready to go.
Okay, very good, very good.
Thank you for doing that. Yeah, that was a great study. So let's look at this scan, all right? So look at this patient. What do you guys see here? Chin rest, patient extending forward, right? Let's look at their airway. So I like to use in vivo. I don't know what you guys use. Drop it in the chat. Wow, not a bad airway. 224 millimeters squared for the minimal cross-sectional area. But look at what this chin rest has done to her nasion basion C3 angle, the NVC3 angle. So here's the midline. We're going to draw an angle from nasion to basion to the upper anterior point of C3. Wow, 129 degrees. Okay, remember we said 110, 112 plus or minus 5 degrees. This patient is a few standard of deviations away from that mean. And so you can imagine what this patient's airway would be in their natural head position, right? It would be much, much worse.
That's fantastic. Let me share this slide to kind of draw that point home. So it was 130, which means that the change in the nasion basion C3 is about 20 degrees. That means she more than doubled her airway by keeping her head forward like that in the chin rest, all right? Do you guys see how dramatically different that is? And you can even see it on that case because she doesn't have a horizontal visual axis. The maxilla should be pointed straight, but you can see on that the maxilla is pointed upwards. Do you guys see that? That's the first clue. Then you can measure the nasion basion C3 angle. This has important implications because if you're doing bicuspid extraction, retraction, right? And then you put the patients in the CT scanner like this, you're not going to measure changes to the posterior airway space. And you're going to conclude that it's safe to remove premolars. And that is exactly what they have done in defense of premolar extractions. So now what we're saying is that it's not about the airway, it's about the posture. So when you go look at those extraction cases, don't be so focused on the airway. Look at the posture. Why are all your patients coming out with these forward head postures if you're such a great orthodontist and it doesn't matter to pull the teeth and retract the jaws? Are you guys with me? Are you guys starting to see the huge implications of doing these protocols in a standardized fashion? Doing them in a standardized fashion means doing it in a standardized fashion. So now I'm getting questions like, should we have them suction hold? Well, natural head position, that means not altering them, natural. Close your mouth, breathe through the nose, place the teeth together. Swallow once, then rest your tongue where it naturally goes. Now, if you're altering this and you're telling your patients to suction their tongue or doing different things, you're introducing new variables. So in order to be standardized, it has to be standard. You have to do it according to this protocol. But that's also why we're all coming together, because your input is valuable. And if you're seeing any challenges to this, we all want to be on the same page. We did extensively peer review this among the airway community, and we have reached consensus with this protocol, but I just wanted to make sure we're on the same page. If you ask them to suction hold, you're altering the CT scan. It's got to be natural, resting, normal posture for it to be validated. All right. Let's see what happens when you, what in this case, what happened in this case? Wow, this patient has no airway. Dr. Koppelson, we got to trach this patient, right? Who wants to trach this patient? What's the airway here, Dr. Koppelson? Okay.
Yeah. I can pull up the CT. I think I have it open if you guys want to.
Yeah, go for it. Let's look at the CT. Oh my gosh. How is this person alive? How is that person alive? What happened? Okay.
I think it's
this one. That person didn't read the instructions all the way through. All he heard is swallow once. He didn't hear, then rest your tongue where it naturally goes. Okay. So if you're asking them to do a suction or to do weird things with their body, okay, to hold their tongue up or swallow, you can see
that
he's got no airway, right? There's no question.
Got no airway. It's okay. Zero. Guys.
So now we said this is not valid.
Yeah.
Boom. Okay. And what happened? Let's redo it. So what happened on the redo, Dr. Koppelson?
The redo.
I'll show it until you do. Okay. So here's the redo until you have it up. All right. So it looks totally different, doesn't it? Don't you think that's more representative of what we're looking for? You can see he has the low resting tongue posture, elongated soft palate, slight forward head posture. And so it's coming out. The other thing we'll mention is that on these CBCT scans, it's less about the measurements and it's more about the subjective quality. Does that tongue fit in that palate? Where is the spot? I'm asking this patient not to put their tongue between the teeth. If I ask them to put their tongue up, is that where their natural rest position really is? Or is keeping their tongue at the spot contributing to headaches and not likely to convert to routine function? Maybe this is someone who has to have the front of their tongue down and the back of their tongue up. And so in this way, we're learning and gleaning insights that are more than just the measurements, even though we're here talking about the measurements that are very useful as a research and validation kind of tool. So this is a more appropriate. So we're seeing the nasion-basion C3 angle of 106. What a beautiful job Dr. Koppelson's doing to do this cephalometric analysis before our eyes. Tell us what we're seeing, Dr. Koppelson.
So same patient, right? Totally different airway, right? So we had him actually follow the protocol, standardized protocol. And what you're getting is a more ideal representation of how he is living his life day to day, right? So we can see that his NBC3 angle is within normal range. We can see that his airway is 199 millimeters squared. So that's, again, outside of the danger zone, okay? And I was just doing my nervous tick. When I see a CBCT scan, I start doing SNA, SNB. I start measuring intermolar width. So that's all I was doing there. But what you can see, like how different, this is just someone in their natural posture versus an active swallowing phase, how different their airway could be. I think I had one more example I wanted to share, Dr. Zaghi. Let me pull it up real quick. Should be this one right here. So this one, slightly elevated NBC3 angle, guys. So 117 degrees. And let's look at his airway.
Yeah. And wow. Measure the intermolar width. You measure the intermolar width here. And then also on that chin rest one, if you can measure the intermolar width on that one, that would be good too.
I'll do that in a second. So here we go. Wow, super narrow, 28 and a half millimeters. 28 and a half.
With an appropriate NBC3, you can really see the airway. But look at that other patient who had the really forward head posture, 130. She's also 28 millimeters intermolar width, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. But the CT looks completely different because the head and neck angle is so forward. And then, questions come up here as Dr. Koppelson's doing this. So about 28 as well, right? So 27, even smaller. And then go show the sagittal on this again, Dr. Koppelson. So two different patients, both of them have narrow 28 millimolar intermolar width. One of them, airway looks great. The other one, airway looks terrible. all because of the head neck angle here. One of them is 130, the other one is closer to 105, all right? Again, the purpose of this is to remind you guys that the CBCT is only one tool in the overall picture. So let me show you a couple examples of how we put it together, with your permission, Dr. Koppelson, all right?
Of course.
So here's an example of an individual who has a tongue tie, yet we're aware that even if you have a tongue tie, you may have some tongue space issues. And if you don't have enough room in the mouth for the tongue, that can pose problems. So we do the CBCT. We see the head neck angle is appropriate, good posterior airway space, slightly low tongue. This patient's going to be a good candidate for tongue tie release. Whereas this patient with snoring, tension, jaw clenching symptoms, maybe not so much interested in doing a tongue tie release in her, because her head and neck angle is 120 with almost no airway. So this becomes more of a tongue space issue. A question becomes, is it tongue tie or tongue space? You also have to keep in mind that it could be other things. It could be just myofunctional. It could be nasal breathing. It could be tonsils and adenoids, and it could be nothing at all. The CBCT scan is only one tool that you want to use in the greater context of, you know, helping to take care of these patients. So, you know, we have this patient here. We can see that, you know, at rest, she does have the forward head posture. We recognize that the forward head posture may be a compensation because she's doing the head tilt, chin lift. If we were to put her in more of a neutral head position, we would see the maxillofacial deficiencies here, yet that wouldn't necessarily be the goal. It's okay to be in this compensating posture, but we recognize that the whole body's connected, and this can put an extra strain on the spine, neck, and shoulders. So really in these patients, we're just using each data point regarding the tongue tie, the tongue space, the functional assessments to determine, you know, is this a patient that is likely to suffer from very severe sleep apnea, needs to get a sleep study, needs to consider something urgently? Or is this someone who, you know, may be having forward head posture, not due to airway, due to tongue tie, or due to other functional issues? So anything else you wanted to add? And we'll take questions, maybe some comments from the audience. But I would say the take home points are to recognize that posture affects the CBCT. You have to compare apples and apples. A standing CBCT should be compared to a standing CBCT, a sitting to a sitting. Using a chin rest can depress the chin or extend the chin. Using a bite registration is going to push it back. If you're doing the suction hold, it's going to alter your airway dimensions. And so with that, I hope that you guys have learned something, taken some takeaway points, found this useful and helpful for your practice, and that you'll consider using our standardized protocol. And maybe someone wants to take up of the research project of going back into the literature at all those extraction, retraction articles, and using this angle to reanalyze what they did to show that, hey, when you're doing retractive orthodontics, maybe the airway isn't changing, but what's really being impacted is posture. And in fact, when you expand these patients, the first thing that changes is their posture, even before airway dimensions. Dr. Koppelson, anything else?
No, that's great. I want to reiterate, I think standardizing things is going to be the greatest thing to help you, you know, not make mistakes and you know, have reliability between all of us when we're collaborating with each other. And yeah, I think, like you said, the NBC3 angle is going to be a great conduit to figure out how accurate these scans are, reliability. And you can see how powerful the impact of even 5 degrees, especially when you start going 5, 10, 15, 20 degrees, can be. So that's all I have to add.
Yeah. And then one more thing, if you want the protocol, okay, you want to download it, here it is. Come to the journal. Okay. We gave you the link. Everything, all of the images, okay? Everything we talked about, you want to use it in your PowerPoint for your lectures, it's all here. It's all open access. Thank you to Howie for contributing to make this open access. And you have the protocol right here in high resolution, right from the journal website. You can download it as a PowerPoint, whatever you need, whatever you want. Extremely prestigious Journal of Oral Maxillofacial Surgery. Kevin, how many edits did we do? How many times did we go back and forth?
We did a lot. We did a lot.
How many weekends did we spend on this weather?
We spent a lot.
How many cups of coffee?
Good. I think you guys got a great kind of general overview. I really do recommend that you read the article. It's a fun read. It's the discussion section. We go into a lot of the history of, CBCTs and airway and airway measurements and all kinds of stuff. And I think it's a really good refresher for all of us airway providers just to even the discussion section and get a gist of all of that.
And another big thank you to our affiliates, Dr. Hansen, Dr. Harry, Dr. Stewart, Dr. Pada. This is the biggest study that's been done. The other study that was close to this was 47 subjects total. But we were able to do, close to 100 subjects. Because if everyone just does their part, if we do 20 here, 20 there, 20 there, it multiplies. And similarly, as we're trying to make a change and impact the community, if we all just do the little bit, spread the message, we're really able to get the job done and achieve the vision that, Howie has for us here at the AAPMD. So back to you guys.
I'll add one thing to this before we turn it back to Howie and Stacy. Dr. Koppelson, I love what you said, and Dr. Zaghi, how you just closed it, because this right here is the pinnacle of collaboration from like Kansas City to Kelowna to Texas to Oklahoma. Guys, this was multiple groups coming together. And I love that there are PTs and folks from Philippines and Kuwait all over in terms of the participants in the room tonight. So thank you guys. Take this information, share it with your community. I'm going to turn it over to Howie, and then Stacy's going to wrap it up with a few words and resources. But first, let's just take a moment to thank Dr. Koppelson and Dr. Zaghi. And then Howie, I'll turn it over to you.
So first, thank you, Drush and Kevin, for a great presentation. And I hope the audience will appreciate how important a study like this is. You're building a house, an airway house. And if you're building a good house, you have to make sure that every structure that's going into the frame is based on a good foundation. And you look at studies where people show before and after where the head's in a different position. Or they say, somebody has an airway problem, or you can't make a judgment based on a cone beam, but that's because you're not looking at it in the same way that the two of you are looking at it. And it also gives insight that we always look at the posterior border of the tongue. Is it smooth and relaxed, or does it look like it's irregular and contracted? And in patients like that, they may be using their frenum as a compensating protective device and offering to do a frenectomy just because it needs to be done without looking at that, you may actually doing a patient a disservice rather than a service. So this is being able to assess information is really important. But before we leave, I would like you, Sarush, to tell us how people can get involved in doing research, because the future of our growing our community, which I believe is under threat from all the things we've heard in the news, is based on having continually good research.
I love that. What a great opportunity, Howie. Go ahead. I hope I didn't interrupt you.
And I know that you've worked so hard to create a template, a platform that we can plug in new research studies, multi-center studies, just like this one, where people can learn, can participate, and they can go through a learning protocol where they can learn how to be accepted as part of the research. We're going to talk for a couple of minutes about how people can participate. And I just think it is so important that people, I showed this little slide at the beginning, get your head out of the sand. Mm-hmm. And if this is what you believe in, put your time and your money where other people's mouths are and tongues are.
Yeah.
So give us a little bit of the great thing you've created, Sarush.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for this opportunity to really talk to you guys about what is research and how do we do it. So first of all, I just want you guys to reflect on the fact that, hey, I learned something today and I'm viewing the world in a little bit different way. I'm going to go to my clinic and next time I look at a CBCT scan, I'm going to look at it with a new set of eyes. Have we achieved that objective for anyone here today? Is anyone going to go back to their clinics tomorrow and the next time they look at a CBCT, look at it a little different? Maybe get that angle measurement and kind of see, hey, what's the angle here? That is what we are trying to do with research. With research, what we're trying to do is to see things with a new set of eyes, okay? Because ultimately what we want is that we are seeking the truth, all right? And so what we've hoped that I've done here for you guys today is to giving you a little bit of a lens that you can really use to appreciate this truth. And, you know, the process of research means that you're constantly investigating and you know, coming up with new ideas and approaches. So how can you guys participate? We have to recognize that the kind of research that Kevin and I are involved in and Dr. Yoon and others is at this point going to be high level research, taking it that last extra step. But you guys are participating by attending the AAPMD conferences, by attending these webinars, by sharing your observations. That in and of itself is research. It's level 5 research, okay? So just, hey, I saw this cool thing, putting it out there, recognizing that that is research is the first step. Secondly, it would be great if we could put a few of these observations together so that we could have more than just like one case. For example, we recently had an observation that, hey, we have a lot of singers in our practice. And, you know, these singers are reporting improvements to their voice. So you put one case with another case. And now in the International Journal of Oral Facial Myology and Myofunctional Therapy, we have a case series of 12 patients who've all had the similar findings. That is a very easy type of research project, okay? If you guys are interested in doing this, take a look at this paper that I just published as a kind of platform, all right? As a kind of, you know, how does this work? You have an introduction section, you have case 1, case 2, case 5, case 6, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, you have a theme. I will tell you that I am on the board of the International Journal of Oral Facial Myology and one of the editors. And it has an amazing a chief editor, Nancy Solomon, who is so dedicated and open. This is an open access journal for now, okay? And there is a call for paper and research. If you're interested in getting your work published, we highly recommend submitting to this journal. Nancy will walk you through and give you feedback, revision, 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 until it is suitable for publication. So if you have an idea that's ready for research, all right, get started. Put together a series, 5 patients, 10 patients, 20 patients, whatever it is, to make it to that level 4 case series. If you're interested in taking it to the next level, right, to the major leagues of research, then I would have you first learn more about the research process, all right? I have 2 research lectures here. One of them is what I did at the AAPMD. It's 4.5 hours long, all right? Followed by 1.5 hours. So you have a 6-hour course right here on my website, totally free to access, on how you can get involved and learn more about the higher levels of research. And that's really where we would come into play to kind of push it to the next level. So if you have you know, a basic level, we want to see a pretty good size up so that we could then take it to the next level. Because the higher level research you go to, it's very expensive, very time consuming, IRB, multi-center. And so we have to recognize our limited resources and really pick and choose which ones we're going to take. And it's not only something that can be done research-wise, but what's the point? What's the significance? How are we going to make a difference? In this paper, the reason that we published it is because extraction, retraction, right? The research is against us. The research is saying that it's okay to do that because the CB. So no, this is an opportunity where we're all going to come together and say, you guys need to open your eyes. It's not just about the airway. It's about the posture. This is the first article among oral maxillofacial surgeons and CT scans that shows that posture matters. Can you guys celebrate that with us? Do you see how huge that is? Those are the kind of studies that we're going to invest our time and energy in. The ones that are really going to make irrefutable. Nobody can refute based on this study that posture matters. Posture counts. And that gives you a voice at the table. And we are here to empower you through research.
Well said.
Thank you, Dr. Zaghi.
You have to try to be a little bit more passionate about this, Suresh. So
this was really fun, Howie. I know you invited me to come to Atlanta, but I think our strengths are these webinars, okay? So I would love to come see you guys in person. What we're going to make a commitment is we're going to focus on research and we're going to make these webinars and we're going to make them accessible with each publication that we did. I'm having another little one on the way. It's a little bit difficult for me to travel so much, but you might be seeing more of me for Zoom for the next couple of years. But then hopefully once we're done with kids, maybe I'll come back on the circuit.
We look forward to it.
We need more Zaghis in the world, Doc.
We do.
All right. And Dr. Koppelson, I love that this was your first AAPMD webinar. Let's give Dr. Koppelson a huge round of applause.
Yes.
He's just
thank you guys.
And he also has his new his mind program.
There's a webinar on the 20th for those who want to learn more about the 20th. Mind behind the mind.
Yes, if you guys want to learn more
mind about behind the mind.
If you guys want to tune in on April 20th at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, it's a Thursday. I'll be doing a deep dive into maxillary expansion, going into the diagnosis, the clinical presentation, the all the different techniques that are out there to treat it, and some of the new exciting stuff we're doing at the Breathe Institute, which I'm really proud and excited about. I'm looking forward to share. So it's completely free. I think if you go on my Instagram, you can find how to register for it there. I actually don't.
Laura will drop it. I'll have Laura drop it in here.
Okay, thank you.
I know we're going a little bit over. I want to give Stacey her few minutes because these are great resources. Yeah, go for it, guys. Thank you, Dr. Z, Dr. Koppelson. If you are pictured in this photo, say hello. Let us know you're still awake in the chat if you see yourself in this photo.
Thank you, Stacey,
take it over.
So much so we for have, coming tonight. That was wonderful.
Stacey?
Yes.
I just want to say that Stacey has taken over the direction of our AAPMD liaison and done a fantastic job growing every day. Calls for excitement. See, we got new members in this statement, new members. And if you look at our attendees, Dubai, Kuwait, Australia, like we usually have four or five continents represented on every webinar, which is really, really great. And I know the future of our mission, our community, and our organization is in good hands with young people, like Stacey. So Stacey,
yes,
close us with your final message.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to thank everybody that was attending tonight, especially the liaisons, for all the support and all the hard work that they've put into just getting all this message out to the outreach and to the public. If you are not registered for Collaboration Cures 2023 in September in Orlando, we highly recommend that you do it. You will not regret it. It's an amazing experience. So. Airway Collab, this is our way to merge and collaborate even more and push all of this into the public. We want to find ways not only with the collaboration cures, but really to focus on the cures aspect of this and find ways to link the Foundation for Airway Health and make the liaisons be the public speakers for our patients, for our organization, and just to help everything grow and get awareness out there. So we want to see a lot more interaction. This is just the clever, the banner on this, it's actually the dates are 7th through the 9th. So I want, we need to repair that one, but yes, but just join us for any events. We have so many things. The collab at aapmd.org email address is great. You can email me at Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y at aapmd.org if you have any questions. And then this is my big thing. So this week, our new liaison section in the AAPMD website is going to launch. So if you are a liaison, you are the only one that's going to be able to get access into these resources that we're building for you. It's going to have Q&A, so you guys can interact with that. I want to post study club dates and their frequencies. So please email me and let me know when you're holding these. There are so many people that want to join in on your webinars and see what's going on in different demographics and what the struggles and successes are in those areas. But it'll have resources, study club dates, all kinds of good media. So so look out for that. And I'll be emailing you guys soon once it immediately launches. So anyway, just wanted to say thank you so much. And I'm just really blessed to be here. And I just loved this presentation tonight.
Thank you guys.
All of you have watched it. Go back and watch it once, twice, more times. There is so much important information. And I'm sure every time you watch it, you'll learn something new and it'll make a big difference in the way you run your practice. Thank you both very much. And I'm always so jealous of you people on the West Coast where you look so fresh and alert, even ahead of you. Thank you so much. And so, Drew, sorry, I've heard you've already volunteered to do more Zoom lectures on, so it's recorded, so.
You got me. These are fun. Kevin and I are gonna talk tackle them. The next one we have is a functional tongue space classification coming out. That's going to be really, really exciting. How can you determine just at looking someone's mouth what their CBCT will look like? Validate. All right. So we're taking it to the next level. You can see we're putting the steps there, right? Posture affects CT. How can we protect the CT without actually exposing them to that radiation, taking the images?
He's got 11 more in addition to that he's behind the scenes working on. Yeah. But hey, we'll focus
tie.
On that.
Next a good one on lip ties coming out. A 1,000 data points with Audrey Yoon's group. That's going to be a good one.
We may have to make it. This may be a mini series.
We'll do it.
I love it. All right, guys.
Anyway, all right. Got to get home to the family.
Everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. Bye.
Enjoy. Thank you.